You want to be an actor? You need to study improv. Why? Because it helps you think on your face, legs, elbows, feet. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Here we go. See, I always like to surprise Roxy every week with a cool song. Name the musical. Name the musical.
I'm Singing in the Rain.
Yes! Good.
Well done.
It took too long.
Did it take too long for
me to... I was like, it's the make them laugh in the rain.
No. Well, I'm telling you, there's a lot, and Gabe as a teacher will confirm, there's a lot of people who these days would not know that.
Absolutely wouldn't know that.
Absolutely would not know that. So,
well, I absolutely did.
Good for you. I'm going to do a thing, guys. We're going to do an episode about what you should know, how you should have your knowledge of
movies and film. I told you I suck at trivia.
We're not going to put you under the gun. Don't worry. We'll have other people in
here. Not like we did in today's episode.
No, we did in today's episode. So I am here once again with my fabulous, wonderful co-host, Roxy Stryer.
Yeah.
She's joining me.
Thanks,
and
John.
Today, I have my good friend slash co-founder slash co-teacher at the Flux Comedy Dojo at Playhouse West and co-cast member of my play, Gabriel Greer.
Thank you so much. I'm a lot of co's.
Yeah.
I like that.
You're a lot of co's.
Yes.
So what we're talking about today is improv. Now, last week we talked about why you need to study acting. Well, this is another way of studying acting, but it's very specific and it's very helpful and it's very useful. Everybody today looks at a resume and wants to see you have some improv experience. And we're going to go into that today and explain why that is, a little bit of history and how it helps in your acting and in your business.
So off the bat, I'm not hearing you say that it's a substitute for what we talked about last week.
Absolutely not.
It's additional.
It's in addition. It's a very crucial skill. Some people say, well, I don't want to do 5 years of improv and do a sketch show. You don't have to. We're even just talking. The basics are really, really important. But before we start, we're going to get into the first segment of my shows every week, which is Sean's Week.
Sean's Week.
Yeah. We're actually working on a fun. Yeah. We're going to have a fun thing.
Oh, we're doing it.
Stay tuned for, I don't know, it'll never happen. No, it will happen. So anyway, this week was kind of a horror theme for me, and I'll tell you why. First of all, before I came here, I worked with Tony Valenzuela on an audition just now. Tony Valenzuela does Black Box TV on YouTube. It's a big horror YouTube channel. He cast me in his first movie, The Villisca, which was about a haunted house. It's a true story. It's the biggest mass murder of the 1900s. And it turned into like the most haunted house, and paranormal people go all the time. So I did his movie a few years ago. Then I just did a movie music video with him like 6 weeks ago where he had me in prosthetics. And then he just brought me in today. So there's a real loyalty with you're first of all really lucky to get a director who wants to work with you a lot. And there's definitely a loyalty within the horror community. Especially if a director and an actor combine, the fans like to see a familiar horror face all the time. And so I'm lucky to be in that kind of subgenre. It's not my 100% of what I do, but I'm really lucky to be a part of that. I continued doing a production meeting with my horror comedy. We sat down and did budgets, and I have to do page cuts. I have to go from 98 pages to 90 pages to save money. I have to look at scenes.
Is that a note that somebody specifically
gave
you?
My producer literally was like, you don't understand. Like, that's 3 days of shooting. That'll save us a bunch of money. And I need to look at some scenes and go, do you really need it like this? Can we do that instead of outside at a car or whatever? Could you move that to a different place, to save the budget? And so those were my marching orders. And then I have to do lists of the actors' names that I want for bigger parts that are in the horror community or will, get funding. So that was really great. And the one thing I do have is when I do make it, the horror community will be ready to respond because I go and see them very often, like I did last weekend at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky.
What is Scarefest?
Scarefest is a horror I always have to make sure because you say horror convention, people go, wait, what?
Not the brothel?
You're going to Amsterdam? Yeah, thank you.
Good improv.
A horror convention where you go with, you meet fans and sign autographs. Scarefest, there it is right there. And I met my girlfriend there 4 years ago, so they love her, and they had her come with me, and we sit at the table.
Was she a fan of yours?
No, thank God, no. Like, literally, if she would have said, oh, did you come here to meet me? And she said, yes, I would say, okay, goodbye. Like,
why?
That would be weird, I think, well, you know what? I know a good friend of mine, Felissa Rose, her husband, her husband was a fan of hers. That's how he met
her. That's kind of flattering. It's too sweet.
No, come on, Gabe.
It's either way. You know, you kind of have to gauge it, because if she's just been staring at you the entire time from across the room, then you're like, okay, thank you.
But if
it's more casual, then you find out later.
Let's put it this way. I was happy to hear that she wasn't there to see me, and that she honestly didn't really know who I was. That made it more authentic to me to build a relationship off of. So, but I go there and I sign autographs for people, and it's just nice to meet your fans, you know?
Who you'll never ever date. So don't even try it at home.
Hi, I'm Sean Whalen. Who would you like to go out?
Yeah. Oh my God, I loved you in People on the Stairs. My, you're attractive. Sorry, I can't date you. So yes, but it's great. They're really friendly. They're, again, very loyal. They've supported me. I did a GoFundMe for my movie Crust, and they were all loyal and helped me out. So it's a great community, and it's very they're really nice, humble, fun people. So I loved it. I loved going to see them.
That's pretty amazing.
So let me introduce Gabe Greer. He and I met 2 years ago when I did my play. He came into audition for like four parts that he never got to play. But he was so excellent.
Good job, man.
He was so excellent in them that we were like, we have to keep this guy around. He had a part of a quirky guy in my play, kind of a quirky nerd. And Gabe is a very good-looking, tall man. And I said, you guys are crazy. Like, this is not going to work. The whole point is you should be quirky looking, da-da-da-da. And my friends, Kathleen Randazzo and Doug Van Bever, producer, said he can do anything. And I was like, And then he just came in and, like, stole the show. It was amazing. And he filled in for other parts. We became friends from then. And then we started the Flux Comedy Dojo at Playhouse West. And
when was that?
That was about 8 months ago.
8 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And then we're starting a comedy troupe of our own with me, Gabe, Kendall Chapman, and Gabe's girlfriend, Stephanie. And what's her last name? I'm not going to say that.
Carpentieri. You nailed it.
But you're Italian. That's why you say that.
A little bit.
So... we've written some stuff, and we're going to hopefully be putting some stuff up in 2019. Gabriel Greer.
Hello. Thank you.
Hello.
I will admit that when I saw you on stage when I came to see the show, and then afterwards, you were the only person that to me was unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. Like, it was and so many talented people, but they were more similar looking to who they are. And then you came off. I was like, there's just no way. There's no way. So you're a chameleon, my friend.
Luckily, I did get that response a lot. And I think I kind of got a kick out of that, because even before I started acting, just people who really, you'd see them one way and then see them in an interview and go, oh my gosh, that's not how they are at all. So
yeah.
You know, and then some days I talk like I'm Australian, like all day yesterday, and then Sean yelled at me, and he's like, why are you talking like that?
Can you explain what you're talking about right now? Because what?
I called him, and he was talking in an Australian accent, and
I was like, hey, Sean, how you doing? And he's like...
No, and at first I thought I had the wrong number, in all honesty, because his voice register was higher, too.
Yes, well, because yesterday, like, typically I was actually talking like a New Zealander, and so my voice goes, like, a little bit higher when I talk as a New Zealander.
Were you practicing for something?
That's what I said.
I sometimes, like, walk around, and then all day yesterday, like, once I start, then it just kind of goes... I don't want to do that the whole show.
But here's my thing. It's like, no, but my thing was, I've known you for a couple of years, and you've never done that.
Yeah.
To me. So yesterday I was like, wait, this isn't like a thing that I'm used to. And so,
artists, am I right?
Yeah, artists. Here we are.
So strange, yeah.
So strange. So let's jump into it. What we'd like to talk to you about improv. Now, a lot of people don't know what it is. Gabe, what would you say improv is?
Well, I think that a lot of people think that comedy and improv are synonymous if they don't really know what it is. I think a lot of people's introduction to improv is
usually
sort of like Whose Line Is It Anyway and
sure.
those type of shows.
Right.
And a lot of comedians are talking about improv, but a lot of acting sort of philosophies are based in improvisational
right.
sort of methods.
Right.
A lot of people that came out of the group theater sort of have an improvisational.
Yeah, there's a dramatic kind of improvisational.
Right.
We're kind of talking about the comedy improv.
Right.
And then, so what it is basically you don't have a script.
Right. You get an idea and then you just kind of make it up. From there.
Exactly.
And it's not all just, there is sort of rules set mm-hmm. in place
yep.
To kind of help.
Build a scene from nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the first kind of rules of that is yes and you
right.
sort of need that to kind of grow.
Yeah,
a
agree.
Scene. Right. It's a,
so for anybody who doesn't know.
So if anyone doesn't know, this is what a not agreeing scene was. So let's say Gabe was doing something with his hands, and I say, oh, I love that you're making bread.
No, I'm petting a chicken.
Yes, that would be the wrong thing to do. As opposed to...
He said
to,
Gabe, but I stepped in anyway.
I know.
Gabe
I
was silent.
That,
I didn't
yeah.
know if he was going to help.
But no, that's perfect. Sometimes yeah. that happens. Like a third person will come in and be like, no, that's a chicken.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, this but isn't a chicken at all. I'm working on this spaceship.
My but, trip to Mars.
Yes.
And I'm just standing here going, but I want it to be a bread.
So yes and
but
saying
yes
and
would
adding.
Be, and then adding information. So if he was doing something with bread and I said, oh, hey, Jimmy, the bakery loves your new recipe for bread.
Yes, and that is why this bakery has been so successful is because of my constant innovations in bread making.
So that's a yes and, okay? So
good for you
that,
and your bakery,
but if you
man.
Keep doing that, if you keep doing that, you can build a scene from that. So that's kind of what we're talking about. A lot of people go see these shows. They love to throw out suggestions from the audience, like you saw in Whose Line Is It Anyway? And it's fun to see people build scenes out of nothing.
Why did you cringe at the first time he said Whose Line Is It Anyway? That's people's introduction to improv. Is that not a good introduction?
No, not at all. I actually... Whose Line It, the British Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Amazing.
Was actually kind of what got me interested in it
right.
at all. I didn't even really know what it was, but I was so fascinated by it. So
yeah.
I think just perhaps recent conversations like has had a negative connotation on Whose Line Is It Anyway, but it really is just like
yeah.
a fantastic show and premise and everything like that. So,
so we're going to discover where did it come from. Its roots are generally, we were just talking before the show, come from a need to connect with the common man. Theater always had some kind of separation in society. And it started in the 1500s, this style anyway, with Commedia dell'arte. It was in Italy.
Yeah. Commedia dell'arte.
Yeah. Commedia?
Commedia dell'arte.
Well, it says a D.
Well, it's Italian. It's not...
Commedia.
That's
no,
better.
Commedia.
Commedia.
Yeah, but you're going Commedia.
Now, right. Do it like that, but with the New Zealand accent.
Commedia dell'arte.
Pretty good.
So anyway, they wanted to bring... stories to the people, so they would go out with their carts into town squares and put on these impromptu shows, and so they didn't need big production, and they didn't have a specific place where the people came and, you know, had to buy tickets and stuff. They could just do some fun stuff for the public.
Right. They'd go around Europe on these carts with their troops, and the scenes were basically based off of normal sort of characters that everybody kind of knew. And then they do improvised sort of scenes and plays based off of that.
What do you right. mean normal characters everybody
So
knew?
There was sort of these
stock characters
that had a certain personality.
Was the,
like, who was the clown? What was the name of the clown?
Are you talking about Punchy,
or yeah,
like
yeah.
That became like Punch and Judy.
Punch, yeah, and, Punch Judy and Judy were
was based off of Punch. From that was based off of
right
this other. Yeah. It's a bunch of Italian names that I don't know. You would if you read them,
but there was almost like the shopkeeper, the loud wife with the, you know what I mean, like that kind of
like
thing.
The aristocrat, the servants. Yeah, everybody right. kind of had a place, and everybody sort of had these,
and they would
stock
know
characters.
What they were.
Yes,
and then so that played out for a while, and then that actually died out for a long, long time. I'm gonna kind of brush over Keith Johnstone and theater sports because there were two seminal people in the 1900s that started, but Viola Spolin in the 1920s, she started doing theater games, and same idea. She wanted to bring theater to the people and have them participate and get them excited so it didn't feel over their head. You know, I mean, this is what Shakespeare did with the groundlings, the real groundlings, mm-hmm. not the comedy groundlings, is to have the whole pit so they could just come and sit there. And so she did theater games. Her son, Paul Sills, in the 50s, he was at University of Chicago.
Her fun comes to die.
Yeah. Wow. Why do we hate University of Chicago? That's,
that is their saying. That is their coin. They have coined that.
Second where, City or no?
No, University of Chicago.
Where fun comes
to die.
I had no idea
you
that
can,
that's what
Jeff
it was.
In the booth, if you want to look that up so that you know yeah. that I don't hate University of Chicago. Wow. I went and toured it.
Until
I'm fascinated
see,
by that.
That is.
I didn't know either.
And what a terrible way to sell your school.
just legitimately the worst, but they own it so hard.
That's so funny
Watch
that they do.
Watch me make it up. Wow, I hope I didn't just
yeah, wouldn't that be awesome?
Picture this
All right,
one.
So then her son, Paul Sills, got together with Del Close, David Shepard at the University of Chicago, and they started doing a lot of this stuff and then kind of creating rules to be able to make it teachable to other people. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like Second City forming and things like that, they were kind of based off of short form, and we'll kind of go over the difference yeah. between short form and long form, but they were based out of this sort of short form, and they were introducing these games and sort of experimenting with the games
right.
that kind of Viola had created mm-hmm. so many years before, a few decades before.
And right? it really, I get, it's so funny because it was so exciting for people to go, ooh, I don't have to learn lines. Like, that's what makes
like the lazy man way of doing
yes,
it. They
it's
thought
like,
it
oh,
first.
I'm gonna, but it's crazy because I mean, there is no easy way out. It's yeah. a skill all its own, too.
It is really
it's
a skill yeah.
all its own. So it's not like you're getting a freebie just because you're not learning the lines. Mm-hmm. But it's really, really helpful in a lot of ways. And then it just started to spread from there. And then people changed philosophies over the years. Then there was the Groundlings in LA that kind of took, it's a little more similar to Second City. UCB created a whole way to, now they were not started in New York with Amy Poehler, right? They were started some in the Midwest, weren't they? Because Amy Poehler took it over. In New York.
When you say they, are you talking about UCB?
UCB, yeah. Upright Citizens Brigade. From what I understand, but they in New York made it really, really popular. Mm-hmm. Improv Olympics. Who else is out there that was big?
Well, I mean, the big ones were, you know, Second City.
Second City, right.
And then I.O.
Right.
Which was started by Del Close and
right.
then
okay.
The Groundlings and then
right.
UCB.
Right. And so, those were the big ones.
Where have you guys studied?
UCB, Groundlings, IO West, and...
Not Second City.
I've taken quite a few workshops. I take quite a few workshops, actually.
Sean, Second what City. About you?
The Groundlings.
What's with the smile? Did you do that?
Yes, yes, I did.
Jeff, I thought you did that.
No,
we can give credit to Jeff.
How do you do that? How do you make that sound with your mouth?
I don't know. It sounds like mine sounds like a cat.
Wow.
Anyway, so
really
so,
good.
So then, what deviated a little bit was exploring the ways to do improv. And one way was short form, which are just short scenes with a beginning, middle, and end. You might get a suggestion of you need to utilize a banana in this scene. Two people will star a scene. They utilize a banana. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then you're out. Who started long form?
So long form was pretty much developed by Del Close,
okay,
and some people that he worked with. They wrote a book Truth and Comedy, which kind of goes into Harold, which is a form of long form. So they developed that in the 80s.
Okay.
And so long form is relatively new. And sort of the difference between long form and short form, somewhat of what you said, but also there's not like a crystal clear definition because there is so much play in both of them. But the short form is sort of, it incorporates games and things like that and tactics. Right. And they are typically like short, like 2 to 5 minutes, but it doesn't really have to do with time. And you constantly go back to the audience to get
suggestions
and ideas. Long form is more, you probably just get one suggestion and kind of take that for
like it could
10,
be a
15,
place of
20,
like, you know, a beach in Florida,
right?
And then you can go spin off, and then you spin and build from things that have been raised within the improv.
Yes.
And do they have the same core, or do you think it's a completely different tactic for long form versus short form and how you study those?
It's interesting because there is short form implemented in long form. So there's these rules that kind of go back and forth in between them. And it is a different skill set, but a lot of the same core beliefs, like yes anding, that sort of agreement,
right.
Making the partner look good and sort of listening and responding and committing point of view, all of these things
and
form
listening
in both
to all
of them.
The information, because you're going to use pieces of that information to build side stories and go from there, you know. So those are the two main types. So how do you find an improv class? You want to start acting. So really quickly, like we did last week, we said that, you know, if you came from any of the New York people that we mentioned, it would kind of be the same thing if they're somehow associated with lineage of, you know, UCB, Groundlings, IO,
Second City,
all these places, or teachers that have studied in that way, in those places. Our school has teachers like Gabe, mine, and Lincoln have teachers who have studied at all different places. So that makes it a plus that we've studied, you know, in different schools and have those disciplines, because they're really the core. And then just like last week, very simply, you just go and you should be able to audit. And you, A, watch how they're doing, you know, again, what the, as Holly said, what the teacher, how the teacher is treating the students, how, you know, how it's being nurtured, how it's being done, you know, what they're learning, if they're actually learning stuff. You can audit usually and see that.
I think what's a little bit different, just as somebody who's been new on the improv scene, I guess. That sounded so weird when it came out. I've been taking improv classes, and they don't typically let you audit the same way they let you audit acting classes, because there's a set amount of classes per course, and they're not that large, as opposed to acting classes, which are ongoing.
Correct.
So if it's like a 6-class program, a 12-class program, they don't want you auditing
one. But
that's
usually the big schools.
Right, the big schools.
But I'm saying, but if it's a big school, you're probably not going to go wrong, is what I mean.
Right. Oh, so you're talking
about the smaller ones. If you don't have to audit a school, if it's going to be one of the major ones, if it's going to be Second City or UCB or Groundlings, you know it has a rich history and it's been around for a long time, and you're going to get something valuable from those. So I mean, I guess I'm talking about smaller ones, you know, things, ones that you don't necessarily have the big name behind it. I guess the only other way would be to go to their website, same way, look at the students, look at who they've, you know, maybe what their IMDb is and things like that.
And the other thing I just wanted to point out to people, because I didn't realize this when I started, is that they are all very different in terms of who they're going after, what kind of thing you're going to be learning. So like people out here will say, you know, UCB is better improv for writers as opposed to Groundlings for actors or whatever it is. Now people have different feelings on that, but try to put your ear to the ground a little bit and hear why people take certain ones as opposed to others. So
and
you don't just start one
course.
And
what you would like to work on.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay. So we're not going to go into do an improv class here. We'll do that another day. We're going to have kind of a fun improv class, hopefully with Lincoln, and hopefully Gabe will be busy. Anyway, but we'll...
Nope, I won't. My schedule's fully open. Thanks for having me.
And I hope it's the New Zealand Gabe.
The audio listeners won't even know it's Gabe.
Yeah, they won't even know. But we want to tell you why it's crucial to take it. And we're going to go over two aspects, the acting aspect and the business aspect. Thank you. Number one, as I said jokingly in the thing, it gets you out of your head. Why would you say improv game gets you out of your head?
Well, when like Viola and Keith Johnstone talk about actors like really try and get in it, like they're so cerebral, and it's like they set up these exercises to get them out of their head and just get you thinking, just get you like your natural, what's inside of you, your own genius out. So improv really sort of finds your voice.
Right.
It helps you find your own voice, because if you're trying to be somebody else, you're not going to be. You know what I mean? Like in acting or anything like that.
Right.
If you're sitting there, oh, I'm trying to be Marlon Brando, or oh, I'm trying to be Gary Oldman or James Dean, or
So you don't mean if you're trying to be the character. You mean if you're trying to be an established actor?
If you're trying to be
someone you're not, without having any root in who you truly are and your instincts, or thinking, oh, I'm going to do it this way because I think that's maybe what they like, as opposed to, you know, you just sell who you are, you know, and I've talked about that. Know who you are at the core. And what Gabe is saying is, what I say to my students is, you would never use your nose to smell food. I mean, sorry.
You would never.
I use my nose to smell food all the time.
You would never use your hand to smell food, and you would never use your nose to pick up a cup. That's not the useful thing. And the fallacy is, and what improv really, and a lot of modern spiritualism talks about this too, you are not your brain. Your brain is literally just another part, like your elbow, like your nose, like your hand. And so you don't use your brain in improv. When two little kids run into the field and one picks up a stick and they say, we're soldiers now, and they say, great, and they start dueling with the sticks with like their swords, and then they run over to the playground and say, and that's our castle. They're not thinking and going, ooh, should I? Do you think he'll like it if I say that? It's just freedom. It's just complete freedom to envelop yourself in playing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There needs to be a sense of play. This is a creative, artistic endeavor I think at its core, you know. And the more you can find sort of that play, that inner child, and find yourself, like your true artistic voice, the better you are going to be, I think, eventually.
Right. Listen, and you need to think to drive down the street and to pay your rent and to hold a job. But who directed The Graduate?
Jeff knows.
Michael, who is it?
I don't know.
Why am I going blind?
I told you how I feel about trivia.
Mike Nichols, is that
right? Mike Nichols, yes, Mike Nichols. He did a two-person improv with Elaine May in the
50s. That was a good look for all of us.
Thank you.
Yep.
but he said, listen, you have to be – what's counterintuitive is we need to go to a pool and see water and dive off the diving board and know that the water's there. In improv, you have to dive off the diving board and believe that the water will appear, but it will only appear if you dive off the diving board. So it's 100% clearing yourself and trusting it will be there, that you are enough, that you're smart enough, you've lived enough life that things will just come. So it definitely gets you out of your head, which helps all of your acting. It will help any role that you ever have. The less you're in your head, the better people do. That's just a fact. It helps you also, that which dovetails into, if you're out of your head, you're going to trust your instincts more. Choices that you make. Talk about that a little bit, Gabe.
Yeah, so earlier today I had an audition. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, some of how it was written was sort of strange and difficult.
That last line was so weird,
right?
Out of nowhere.
And I was really just kind of in my head about it. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to just my improv training, and I was like, okay, like let's just try this and find it.
Right.
And what started happening was just like my natural instinct as to why I would say this. And then I found it. And then when I went in today, you know, the whole room cracks up. And they just go, that's so interesting. Like, we hadn't seen that before. And we, like, really loved that choice. And it was just after I stopped thinking so much about it and was just like, okay, what naturally comes out of me? Why would I say this? You know, I got to really, like, improvise it.
Right.
And then they just sort of love that. So,
well, this is the thing is, and this is, listen, for all you actors listening to this, is we've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And you still get in your head. It's the same thing I always say when this meditation teacher that had been doing it for like 50 years, Jon Kabat-Zinn, they said, oh, but when does it get easier? And he goes, never. And it's right. True. You always have to do the work. You always have to fight the instinct to think, because we have to think. 98% of our day we have to think. So we have to – it is a struggle to pull that thinking back and to trust our instincts. But that's what training to be an actor is. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
No. Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is to really do improv well, and this is a core for acting, is you have to listen. You have to listen. You can't build a story. Here's a scene where we're not listening. Watch this. Gabe, that banana looks so fresh.
Sean, this building is on fire. I'm going to jump out the window now. Goodbye, Sean.
See, he wasn't listening to what I said.
Maybe he just didn't care much about the banana.
That's true. But now, if he would have said, why live if I have to live in a world with fresh bananas?
Yeah.
Then I would have known he was listening. Then he was listening. But that's the thing, is you have to listen. And all of acting is listening.
Acting is reacting.
Acting is reacting, but you can't react unless I'm listening to mm-hmm. what you're doing. So it's crucial. And then by listening, trusting yourself, then your instincts, trusting your instincts, then you start building stories and yourself starts to come out. And if you know yourself, your acting gets better.
Right. And I'll just say this, like, at least from what my philosophy on acting is, because there are different, I've had the fortune to go and teach in Shanghai, and an ancient sort of Chinese way of acting is very sort of different. Mm-hmm. We have a Western kind of way of acting, and the acting that I value is people having like a real experience,
mm-hmm.
like each sort of time that,
yeah.
that they do that, which absolutely requires you to be present, to be listening to somebody,
mm-hmm.
that whoever is on stage with you or whoever you're supposed to be on the phone with or anything like that.
Right.
And it really, in order to have that sort of experience, you have to get into that situation. And
right.
So each one of these things, the listening part, the sort of reacting, the
getting out of your head,
completely getting out of your head and being present, all of that is necessary in improv. Mm-hmm. Like improv
right.
forces you to do that and
right.
sort of function that way.
Yeah. And if you get those, then it's going to spread out into any acting that you do, which takes us to the last thing. The more you do that, the more confidence you get in your artistic choices. And quite frankly, you become confident, period, in your acting. If you have to go in front of a bunch of people and they say, build a scene based on a raisin, and you can do that, then when you do have a scene, it's going to be a little bit easier. I just did a showcase with the Flux Comedy Dojo. Did we show the picture of the Flux Comedy Dojo teachers? We might have. Yes, here it is again.
Mm-hmm.
The handsome guys in the middle. and so we did a showcase on Friday night, our improv show. And then the same actors had one-act plays and a showcase for their drama class the Saturday and Sunday. And the teacher, Holly, came to me and said, everybody who did the improv show on Friday night all walked into their scene nights so much better than they had been at any rehearsal. And they said, well, since I did that and stretched, it was like lifting 50 pounds, that now doing this made it seem like I was lifting 30 pounds, which was amazing, you know? And they said they were just much more confident, much happier, looser, and it definitely can help both.
Do you guys ever find it challenging, though, when you are so, when improv becomes your life and then you get a script and you're like, But would I, like, I have to find the way that I would say this, but I wouldn't say this. My character wouldn't say this. I would say this because in improv, you just get to say whatever you want. You don't have to stick to that.
In improv, you're finding your voice. You're the writer and you're the storyteller and the actor. In acting, you are being of service to the storyteller. So it's a different skill. You do need to take off one hat and put on the other sometimes. I had a coach who, you know, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I'll tell it someday about me losing the part in Mike Myers' movie, Wayne's World, because I just didn't know how to take off my serious drama hat. And they wanted me to just be goofy, funny. And they gave me like two, it was written for me. And I lost it because I didn't know how to switch those hats. So you have to know the different skills and when it's, which is, you know, which is great, stronger for your improv training, which is stronger for your acting training.
And I would also say that actually almost sort of the opposite. If I get this and I say, well, my character would never say that, I have more of a playground to jump into and go, okay, why would I say this? Mm-hmm. Like, what would make my character say this? And I have so many, like, examples to sort of draw off of. And it'll be like, oh, it's that one time I was in an improv scene and I was robbing a pizza store because my wife was pregnant and I didn't right. have any money. And so it's like this weird yeah, yeah. thing. But it just gives point. Me so much fodder to kind of yeah. then explore why I would say something like that.
Right, right. So it's also helpful in business. It's not just helping your acting, but it helps your business career. And we'll go through these kind of quickly because we're kind of winding down. But it absolutely helps in auditions. Crucial in commercial auditions.
Absolutely.
Crucial.
Absolutely.
They give you minor stuff, and they want to see what you do with it. What were you going to say, Roxanne?
Well, I think 100% accurate. I mean, I've been told to be a tree in commercial auditions. Yeah. I've been told I'm throwing a frozen turkey to my father across the room. And you've right. got nothing. There's right. nothing there. And you have to be able to see
build
something.
Build something out of
nothing. So definitely. And commercial auditions are a great way to make a living out here.
Yeah.
So it's really important for that.
Absolutely. And a lot of times they want to see what you bring to the copy. They want a button. Everybody wants a fun button at the end of commercial auditions now. And a button is basically a closing to the commercial that they haven't written. The milk commercial that I got famous for was they didn't have an ending. And it was me with the peanut butter, and they gave us a lot of peanut butter and bread. We got angry, and then they didn't give us anything else. But we went through the script, and we knew that we lost. I don't know if you have a picture of the milk commercial.
Better yet, a video.
Jeff, or a video of it. But but at the very end, he loses $10,000 because he doesn't do it. And everyone else was getting mad and throwing the phone and stomping down or pounding the peanut butter or anything, and I was the only one who looked at it like, oh, my life is pointless, and I got really sad and kind of looked at the phone, and they went, that's it, we have an ending. And I improvised that, and then when we got to the set, they said, do that, literally just do that, we're going to shoot exactly what you did in the audition. And that literally came from my improv training, and that moment changed my career. Steven Spielberg saw it, loved it, and that's how I got into Twister and met his friends and did Never Been Kissed, and because he was friends with Drew Barrymore and Tom Hanks, and did
The Thing You Do,
and you know,
and you've been in so many things that you don't remember the names. Oh,
I don't
goodness.
Even remember
good
the
problems
name.
To
but
have.
I'm just saying it was
one
great
guy,
and then
Tom Hanks
yeah
that Tom
so anyway it's crucial on auditions. It helps you on sets. Same things will happen to you. I literally did Rob Zombie's movie. I did the first scene in a certain way. The second scene, he said, I don't, what you did, I like so much in the first scene, I want to change the second scene. Let's do it. And he, Sherry Moon Zombie, and myself wrote a brand new scene right on the spot that we shot based on the character I'd done in the first one. He just goes, yeah, let's throw this out. It doesn't really work. And if I didn't have improv training, that would be totally frightening for me. Have you had experience with that on the set?
Oh, yes. Yeah, tons of experience where you have to sort of switch on a dime. Just, you know, you came and saw the play and say, I was unrecognizable. If I didn't have improv training, like I've gone into a set having a fully formed character, and then they go, well, this person came in with this and it's really too similar. So you got to come up with something completely different.
Right.
And then being able to completely do a different character, like on the spot, everything you have crafted, if you had to just be a New Zealander for a day, you know?
He's ready.
You never know.
He's ready. I did a comedy where I was like super wacky, and they said, Jack Nicholson, do Jack Nicholson. And I knew it was from The Shining, and all of a sudden I had to go from literally nerdy, goofy to Jack Nicholson in The Shining. One, I knew the reference, which we'll talk about in another show as we talk about. But secondly, I had to change on a dime, and the camera was rolling. They didn't stop. They said, okay, just keep the camera rolling. Now, Sean, I want you to do it like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Done. And I had to do that in Lost. I think I told that story where they kept on yelling, like, do it mean, do it whiny, do it condescending, do it frustrating, you know. And you have to be able to do that.
Yeah. This actually just happened to me for the first feature that I shot. Where I was cast, it's Jay Muse's directorial debut, so he's new at this, and I was told that I was going in to do like a TMZ-style broadcaster, which is very different. And I showed up. They said, we cast somebody else for a TMZ-style broadcaster. We actually need you to be like news anchor, very like Channel 5, you know?
Mm-hmm. And
I was like, yep, got it. 5 minutes later, we had to shoot. So it was like I had been practicing for a week every day. I'd done it the same way. And then I was like, all right, never mind. And then you just kind of have to be like, I got it. No worries.
It's out the window.
Yeah.
The other thing that it's helpful for, and really quickly, is just your writing. The more you can learn how to tell storytelling, then you write. I talked about, and we will talk about, the proactivity of learning more than one craft when you're out here as an actor, to be a writer, to learn directing, learn writing, so you can do many different things. Again, the big movie coming out is Bradley Cooper's directorial debut, and everyone's saying it's amazing.
Star is born.
So that, as I've talked about, people don't do just one thing, but it really helps in your writing because you're constantly doing storytelling. And a lot of the sketches, Gabe and I just improv stupid stuff over texts or phone calls, but from those things, or just a moment will happen.
You guys improv text?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What does that even mean?
We'll just go back and forth for hours one-upping each other.
Until literally, like, our significant others are like, can you guys stop?
It's 3
like,
in the morning.
Yeah, it's 3 in the morning. But the thing that's sad about us, we're like, but I have to get one more in that's funny, that'll top his. Mm-hmm. And
I need proof of this. Show.
Proof. We'll do some of our. We did a great text about putting on a show in my living room because he was on it. It started. He was on a set with our friend that was doing the improv thing with us, Kendall. And I said, "Hey, have you done this thing?" He goes, "Sorry, we're busy. We're working actors on a set." And I said, "How dare you? I'm working on a show too, inside my apartment. It's going to be a fabulous show." Yes. Thank you.
Did you do that?
Yes, no. That was my.
That was him again.
Wow.
But then I said, then he said, "Oh, well, I don't want to be part of that show." And I said, "Well, I'm going to, you know, it's going to be called Elevator to the Top." And then he texted back. He's like, "Oh, well, what was some of your reviews?" He did a reviewer saying, like, This elevator show kept me stuck in the basement. Like all these different reviews, and then we started going to the cast, and we just kept texting back and forth. But a lot of our writing of our sketches that we've done will be a minuscule idea, and I'll call Gabe and I'll say, "Listen, I thought the two guys at 7-Eleven. I heard a guy at 7-Eleven, and the guy was counting his change, and he's just like, yeah, money." He's like, "Man, we all need money. That means you got to have a job. If you don't have money, you don't have an apartment. You don't have a car. You don't have nothing. You need money for everything." And the guy was just working in the cash register. He goes, "Yeah, man, money is what you need. And if you don't got a job, you don't get no money. And you need money." He's like, "Yeah, we need money." And then he gave him his change and he left. And I said, I called him. I go, "Dude, it was just so stupid. Like, what would happen if the cash register didn't work and they had to just keep it going?" And so we were just making, and there was two ways to go. One, like being simple things like, "Yeah, oxygen.
Man, you need oxygen.
Yeah, man. If I breathe in, I gotta breathe out." And then we just kept going on that route. And then, I mean, so we just, and so we
were kind of amazing.
And so we started crafting a sketch, and we haven't really figured which way it's going to go, but we have this germ of an idea that, you know, it's just, it just keeps going. Oh, no, then we were doing like tangenting off of money itself, like going, if I want to buy a salad, I need that leafy green.
Yeah. And so it's like with that, we do this for hours. Yeah. It's ridiculous. But a lot of shows that are written like this, like if you watch like South Park and stuff like that in their writing rooms, it's just they just pull ideas and they're like, oh, here's something that's funny. And initially you just go, okay, that's not funny. But if your mind is kind of geared that way, you start extrapolating, oh, what could be funny about that? And then just this brilliance sort of comes out of
that.
Or if you're Family Guy and you just keep repeating it and then it finally gets funny. You need money.
And then lastly, very quickly, it just helps in your meetings. If you can think on your feet in any kind of meeting with a producer, a director, anything, and you can think on your feet, and if they start talking about a movie, it just gives you confidence that you'll be fine no matter what they throw at you. You don't freeze up because you're relaxed and open and you let things flow, that things will happen. And so in meetings, business meetings of any kind, and even, you know, people have said dating and anything, you have the confidence that I'll be fine. I'll be fine, whatever's thrown at me.
In life, corporations literally pay improvisers to come and teach this to their team. Salespeople, I do this stuff all the time. I just went and did a team meeting.
A team meeting. It's a new way. Get those guys in line.
A team building meeting.
Very not 2018.
Yeah. And so they... just to get people out of their head, how to talk to people, how to just kind of relax and free flow and things like that. So very important in life.
So it's important in your acting. Awesome. It's important in your business. Now, we wrap up the show every week with talking to Roxy about her week. Obviously, we just heard about this thing you filmed, which is cool.
Roxy's week. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be good. When it comes, it will be good.
Yeah.
So now you know what we're doing, at least. So tell us, like, how do you see these things? What could you work on in your as a beginning actress?
I think that what's so cool, because you guys have been doing this together, is that you do have that chemistry. So I feel like that's another reason why I really need to get back to Groundlings and take the advanced class, because you lose touch with people, and then you don't have those people you can text things with. So I've been like sitting hemming and hawing about it, but I really just need to find the time in my schedule and just do it. Because it's so fun too.
It is so fun. When I came to Los Angeles, my lifelong friends are the guys I went to college with and the people I was in Groundlings with, for sure.
And still today?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's pretty
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way to bond with people.
Yeah.
And get your creative family, which is, I think, a crucial thing.
Huge.
But I'm sure that's another show. But
did talk about that, you know, why you study, because the connections and the networking and everything. 100%. You need a creative family for sure. We will be doing, I know we said we were going to do that acting class this week. Kathleen had some personal things, so it didn't work out. We're going to be doing that next week. And here's a great story. I was just at this audition, and they said, I said, I have to get to this podcast. They said, why? What is it about? I told them, and they said, my God, you have to give me the name, because I have like 10 actors that I want to listen to this right away. They need to learn these things, because I gave them a rundown. So pass this on, everybody, and let your friends hear it. We are on iTunes, How to Be an Actor with Sean Whalen. Please rate us if you like the show. If you don't, pretend you never heard it. You can find us on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up.
I want to hear what you guys have to say, because people are watching this, and I'm hearing from the people that we're close to that are watching it. And our friends are brutally honest, so they would say if it sucked, that they're really enjoying it and they're asking questions in person. But if you guys are listening to this and you're like, wait a minute, I still don't know which improv class is right for me, and I'm in LA. Sean, can you give me advice on this? Or like, you know, I really like Gibbs' vibe. How do I take one of his classes? Or what kind of improv do you recommend for this kind of attitude? Whatever it is, we want to know what the questions you have so that we can answer
them. Yeah, send us some questions so we can start to build. We'd love to build a segment in the show where we're answering your questions. So please send them to us via YouTube, via our Twitter at ThatGuySMW. And Instagram is the same. You can find me on Facebook. I just got a message from a woman who said her 14 and 16-year-old daughter, they listen to the podcast every time they drive to auditions, and they find it so helpful.
That's great.
Yeah, so this is really, really great. Find me on Facebook and message me that way. You can find us at Roxy Stryer.
Yeah, keep it nice and easy.
Keep it nice and easy. Gabe is...
Instagram is the Gabriel Greer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know Twitter?
Gabriel Greer, at Gabriel Greer.
There you go. Yeah. And if you really want to take a New Zealand Gabe class, that's very specialized.
Yeah, you got to pay a lot of money for
you
that.
You got to pay a lot of money for that. That's not an easy one. Listen, keep us, keep listening to us. Share with your friends. Thanks for listening. And as always, thank you for letting me be... messed up my line. I have one line the whole show.
But you know what? You didn't panic. It's the improv skills.
It's
you're
the
not
improv
throwing
skills.
Things across the
care.
Room. You're not crying.
Gabe, give me a way to do it. Throw me a way to do it.
Do it like Sylvester Stallone.
And thanks for letting me be part of your journey.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.